Hello. Yeah, I'm Andy Ho, and then I changed my last name and it's confusing, but I'm just call me Hoey.
How about that?
I got into comedy like 10 years after I wanted to actually do comedy when I was like a teenager, but I didn't start till I was 31.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over.
I love making short films. That was my thing growing up. I just like to make funny videos. That was always the thing I did.
Yeah.
Back in the day, in high school. Just using a Toshiba laptop with some like shitty video editing program that's like illegal, and then just like making a little, and then using like those VCR cameras with the side thing, you know, the one that you hold like that,
mm-hmm.
the flap. So just using that and making videos back in like 2005.
Yeah, where'd you put the videos?
On that laptop, Toshiba laptop.
No, I mean, how did you get them distributed?
So they were just for school, like a school project. Yeah. So like, you know how you have to make a video for school, like your school project or mm-hmm. something? So I'll just go all out because I love watching Chappelle Show.
Yeah.
And then I remember I made like a GTA, first ever video I made, I was like 10 years old. I made like a GTA parody. Like I put all like I used paint or something and put like the life bar and the stars, and then just film myself like robbing a car. So that was my first ever video, was something like that. And then I made like just little silly videos in the beginning. And then what happened is that then I studied arts in university.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you would just write essays about Planet of the Apes or something like that, and just analyze scripts and how to write movies. So I started that, but I didn't really care about it. It was just like something to do for the degree, which is a pointless degree anyway. But like, it was just something I had to do. So I didn't really put much effort into it. I just did enough. Wasn't passionate about it. This is like a university, like films, studying film in university, media studies.
Media studies.
I did a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah. So wait, what did you end up studying in college?
I'm sure my parents won't watch this podcast ever. They wouldn't even understand. So I told them I was studying business.
Yeah.
And then I kept failing it, you know, because I used to be good at maths, you know, and then things happened. Kept failing the maths and then couldn't do it. And then just changed to arts and pursued a Bachelor of Arts, but then told my parents it was business. And then even when I graduated, they came to the ceremony. They still think it was for business faculty, but it was the arts faculty, but all white people look the same. So they don't know.
And your siblings never found out either?
Oh, they don't care. Yeah, no. See, if they watch it now, they'll know. So then I don't think they even care, even if they did know. Maybe they will. But yeah, that's a funny story about myself. Yeah, but then if you want to know how I started making the channel that I have, the Hoey Farmer channel, that came years later from that moment. So I would probably say 3 years ago is when I started that channel, right? And when I graduated from university, I was like, you know, would have been like 7-8 years ago. So after I graduated, it took me 5 years, and I was just working in corporate and just going in and out of different jobs. And then I was like an employment consultant, which is someone, I don't know, because where do you live?
I live in LA.
Yeah. So you know about Centrelink, like the welfare payments. I know, like, you know, in Australia. So then they have people who help you find employment.
Yeah.
To get off the benefits and work.
Yeah.
So I was the guy who would help you find work. And it was mainly just crackheads were my clients, and I would have to help them get ready to be employed.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information. How long did you do that for?
Oh, a couple years, yeah. And then I had enough, and then I went to the farm and became a farmer for 4 years. That's when I started, and that's where I am now. So that's my life story, essentially.
Yeah. But living on a farm must be a special thing, no?
Yeah. Oh, it's, if you don't live on a farm, you never know what it's like to be in touch with nature and to really be in the, like, do you live in like a rural area?
I've lived in
or
a
you
rural.
You live in suburban. You've lived there before?
I've lived in a rural area. I lived on a 2.5 acre property once.
Yeah, where at?
In Riverside, California.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I loved it.
Nice.
And that longan trees. Well, we tried to grow
longan trees. How big was the block?
2.5 acres.
Yeah, right. And so it was just a residential, like a.
It was a residential.
Like but did you have like hunting?
No hunting. It was just a few acres for farming.
And what were you growing?
Longan.
Just longan, right? Mm-hmm. So the temperature is very hot.
Very hot there, yeah.
But not too hot. So it's like tropical,
mm-hmm.
nice. And then you were growing longan.
Yeah, trying to grow it.
You were growing it or your family?
I was growing it. I was trying.
So that was your business?
I was trying to make it my business.
So you have done a type of farming and mm-hmm. you probably come from farming in your life?
No, never did. I just always loved it.
And what did you think about the longan cultivation?
Very difficult. It was very hard.
Did you have many trees? How many trees?
We had about 200.
Right. So 200 trees.
Hard. Very difficult. We didn't make it. It was this, I think it was a very windy, like, valley area,
mm-hmm.
and it was very hard to do. Yeah.
It was a windy valley, and you
it wasn't,
bought the
it wasn't,
block.
It wasn't.
You leased it. You rented it, or you bought
the No, block? I bought it.
I right, bought, like a ranch. Like, you were going to live there.
Live there.
With but, your family, I mm-hmm. assume.
Yeah. But it wasn't windy all year. It was just windy in November.
Yeah. Very windy in November. And then was that causing a lot of damage to the properties? It
completely fucked up the tree.
Like tornado type cyclone.
No, just strong winds. They're
just
called
strong wind. And then all the fruits. And what was the season of longan? Like, what months were you getting them? Was it all year round type?
No, October, November.
So near the windy times.
Yeah.
So it's a nightmare. So really, you're just waiting for the wind to...
Yeah.
And the wind would make everything fall. I would assume a lot of the long end would drop on the ground.
It would break it. Break the branches. Because when you're just growing little trees, it's impossible. Yeah. But, you know, these are things that you don't know until you start to really get into it, you know?
And then, what's your thoughts on farming? And then, what did you do? Like, you stopped doing that, and you changed, or
yeah? Yeah, I had to stop. I had to stop doing it. I was driving and commuting from Los Angeles to Riverside, and it was just a very difficult thing to do. We would go out there for 2 days, you know, and then come back into the city for a few days and then go back and forth.
Yeah.
I had automatic irrigation working, but it was very difficult to manage.
So I'm assuming, okay, what kind of line of work did you do, specialize in?
At that time, I have a factory in Vietnam, and I was importing window covering material, rolls of fabric from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that. So I didn't have to be there all the time. So I'd go back and forth every now and then.
And then I'm guessing you hired workers to manage the farm? Yeah.
No, I would, in the beginning I did, to clear the land enough so we could put down the trees and to put down the irrigation lines. You know, I had to hire guys. But once we were all set up, you know, I didn't have to. But, you know, they were growing, and then the winds came.
Yeah, it was going.
Yeah, we were growing.
The winds came. And then I'm guessing you stopped. How long did you do this farm business for?
A year.
And then you had enough.
It was tough.
Yeah.
Tough game. Yeah. It's tough when you don't know about it enough. It's not like other businesses where could go in and you can change something in a day or two or a week or two, and then things will get better. If you go down the wrong path, you're fucked for the year.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And that would ruin everything, you know? And
yeah.
But one good year can fix everything. So you could keep fucking up, but you get that one good year, fixes everything, right? But that's what farming is. It's basically dependent on the weather, on the season, on your luck, on your life.
Yeah.
On other people's lives. There's many factors.
Many factors.
But a good farmer like my dad, he is a good farmer. I'll give him that. He's very green thumb, very tree doctor, as he thinks of himself. He's like, you know, he looks at a tree, he knows what it needs. Mango, whatever, fruit, tropical fruit. Longan. But we do have a longan tree, but it does not have many fruits. Possibly because of the climate. You know, it's very hot, so we're very specialized in Darwin, where I was living, a place called Humpty Doo. That's the name of the town. And the Vietnamese farmers, they grow okra.
Mm.
They grow long melon, you know, hairy melon.
Mm-hmm.
Bitter melon.
Yep.
And then mangoes, right? They just grow very well in that weather. It's like Vietnam weather. The heat of Vietnam. So that's where I was living. And then now, and that's where I started the comedy. I was doing comedy. I was just doing silly videos, and then people started noticing me. And then now I'm doing stand-up comedy. So that's the thing I'm doing. And then now I'm doing a bit of rapping. I'm doing a bit of everything.
Yeah. Have you found do you think you found your lane yet?
No, that's a great question. My lane, I have many lanes.
Yeah.
I think I was, given a lane to kind of get to another lane. It's like I'm changing lanes
all the
time. But I do need to stick to one lane. That's the problem, isn't it? So I don't know. I'm waiting to see what the universe tells me to do.
But you know what I really like about what you just said is the fact that you continue to explore it, and you let us all see that you're exploring it, that next lane.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Because I think, like, I'm not saying like I'm the best at anything. And but I do know what I'm good at.
And what are you good at?
I'm good at improvisation. I'm good at writing, like writing things. I'm good. I'm still learning, though. Stand-up comedy is my passion. Like, that's my number one dream.
Why?
Is to be that. Oh, because it's just the ultimate skill where you're just using words. Not so much where there's a lot of factors to it. The crowd. You know, I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy ever since I was young. So my favorite comedian is Cat Williams. So I've just designed my life to want to be like Cat Williams somehow. And Dave Chappelle, of course.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's something about Cat Williams. I just love him so much.
What is it about Cat Williams that you love so much?
That he can do it all. So he's like, he can rap too. You know what I mean? When he was like he can just freestyle rap if he wants to.
Do you know much about Cat Williams?
Yeah, I know a lot
everything about him.
I don't know everything, but I know enough about him.
You know enough to have a conversation about him right now because I'm about to get into it.
Yeah, let's do it because not a lot of people can get into a Cat Williams conversation. You know, I'm not saying that I'm a Cat Williams expert, but I know a bit about him because I love his style. I'm a big fan.
You know, I think when you listen to some of his stuff, like randomly clips on the internet, some of it can be very raunchy and it can turn you off. But if you start to study Cat Williams, you'll see how actually brilliant he is beyond any comedian in his class. He's a just a very smart person.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, if you listen to his life story, you're like, whoa, it's a fascinating journey, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. His life has really been through.
Yeah.
Grew up fast, you know. And then I just heard, and then I realized he was a genius growing up.
That's what I was going to get to. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just says it very nonchalantly. Like, you think it's a joke, but he's like, you know.
And then when you start to hear him on different podcasts, you're like, wait a minute. The guy knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
He understands everything. And it's not just, you know, because when you listen to some of the clips on Instagram, you think it's like hood comedy, right? It's like comedy out of, you know, wherever he's from. But it's just maybe like 5% of really what he's talking about is what he's experienced is just 5% of his life. But the other 95%, you know, you could hear it in podcasts and stuff like that.
Well, obviously the Shannon Sharp podcast.
That was crazy.
Kind of brought him to there, but because I have been following Cat Williams way before that.
Yep.
A lot of people now are like, oh yeah, Cat Williams, you see what he did? Da, 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 da. Yeah, he's funny. But I started Cat Williams when GTA 4 was out. Because they had a comedy club in the game, and then they would have Ricky Gervais animated it, and it would be his comedy set. Yeah, like oh, what's the thing about then? And then Cat Williams would come out, and he did the hustling, sir, Tanner, and then he would do that. And I watched that as like, I was probably 16, 17 years old, watching that, playing that game. And then because I knew that that material was from American Hustle. The you know, the one where he's playing the Every Day I'm Hustling Rick Ross song.
Yeah.
He goes, sir, stop that song. So that was like, you know, and then obviously the Pimp Chronicles when he's in the green suit.
Yeah.
And he says, everything he says is funny. And that's what they say in the YouTube comments, like Cat when sometimes they say this about him. Oh, his jokes aren't that funny. But it's just his delivery. Is the best delivery. He could just read the phone book and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like someone who can sing. So, but definitely I would say this, his old stuff is genius. I think as the comedians get older, they kind of lose it a bit, you know?
Yeah,
whether that's just natural, but he's still consistent with it. So I'm biggest fan of his, everything he does. Whatchamacallit? I just love his demeanor, his energy. He's my spirit animal. That's everything. I will model my whole life to him. And
Wow.
then obviously, then he started, oh yeah, here's the thing. Then he started getting into fight with some school kid. He got beat up by a school kid. And then, you know, that was tough. But then he roasted that chick on the radio. So I follow everything he does. And yeah, anyways, I could talk about him for a long time. So yeah, back to you.
Well, look, let's break down this idea of a Cat Williams and a Hui farmer, right? So
mm-hmm.
Cat Williams is black and he's lived,
yes,
he's lived a very diverse American life, right? How do you go from where you are to where he is, living, talking, breathing the data that he gives off? And, yeah, and the reason why I ask this is this, is because in order, this is just my kind of like my philosophy sometimes. I look at like a guy like Cat Williams. I'm like, in order to become like him, because I thought about him a lot. I'm like, in order to become like a guy like him, you have to live amongst a lot of different worlds, right? And the average human being doesn't get the opportunity or has not been put in that many places in their lives to have that kind of experience to start talking about the things that he's talked about.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
How do we get to that point where we can live a bunch of lives like that and we can start having that kind of data bank to really reach in and start working in our art and our podcasts and our rap and all of that, mm-hmm, being a stand-up comedian?
So how to channel Cat Williams
without living or having to live without, that
without
life,
being Cat Williams? Yeah, so I think I'm working on that. My theory and my opinion on that. Okay. Excuse me. So the way I see it is because you have to look at yourself from outside in that aspect. So we're Vietnamese, right? We look how we look. But in the mainstream media, like Vietnamese were very, very minority compared to like Chinese. And, you know, they're, for some reason, they're more like the famous Asian comedians to me is Bobby Lee or Ken Jeong. You know, they're Korean, right? Or Joe Coy, he's Filipino.
Ronnie Chang,
he's what, Malaysian or something, mm-hmm, like that?
Yep.
So in Vietnamese, so who's the guy that's Vietnamese? I'm sure there's a lot of comedians.
In America or in,
yeah,
in the world?
In the world. You know, and obviously in stand-up, and then if you're talking about Ken Jeong, Bobby Lee, they are stand-up comedians, but they also do acting and they also do podcasts. So it's the whole package. But yep, then who's the Vietnamese representation? So that's what I think, first of all.
All right,
like the Asians.
Yeah, I only know the United States. I don't know Australia.
Yeah. So let's talk about the United States. Who would you say?
I mean, Vietnam. Alex Zung is probably the most working comedian in LA because he works at the comedy club. That's where, you know, a lot,
awesome,
of big names come from. I think there's there's two guys that started a production company called Embarrassed by Night and the 626 Laugh Factory. These are Laugh Market.
Awesome.
These are productions here in LA that, or Southern California, California, that travel a little bit with other, and they invite other Asian American comedians. So Fred Lay and Andy Van do that, and they've been at comedy for a few years. Probably Stephen Ho is probably the biggest one right now. I think probably the biggest comedian, Vietnamese comedian that we have right now. Probably one of the newest ones. But he got started in acting like 11, 12 years ago. Then he got into content creation, got big on content creation, then moved over into stand-up. And so he's been at it, I think if you add it all up, it's 12 years. And the way he got started was he was an ER nurse or ER tech or worked in the ER emergency room. And he made these skits based on his experience in the emergency room and his comedy background or acting background. And he just blew up on TikTok and Instagram. And then he did all of that transition work over into acting or stand-up. And now he's touring full-time. Successful.
See, that's amazing. See, that I would love to do that. So yeah. That's my goal already. You know, I'm just starting in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing. I've only realized that what I'm good at. That's what I'm telling you. Like, I only realized what I'm good at recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't. I'm still, as I said, I've got many lanes. I'm still figuring it out. But stand-up is my, like, I just want to be Cat Williams. There's just something wrong with my brain. I just want to be him.
I love it. You're obsessed with
But to be the Vietnamese version of him, obviously, you know, I'm not going to copy him, but I want to embody his spirit. And that's basically just making anything funny. So that's what Cat Williams does. Anything he says, but then Cat Williams has two modes. He's got the crazy on stage. Hey, Sarah, what the hell is the what is it? Super Earth or some shit like that. And then in the interviews, like you know, the media is little Kevin Hart is a plan. You know what I mean? Like, he's got two modes, but everything he says is like calculated somehow, and it's just bang, bang, bang. Very smart dude, but yeah. His comedy almost is so simple.
But when you listen to...
It's complex.
Yeah, very complex. That simplicity that he delivers makes it seem easy, but it's not easy.
Exactly. So what I think of that is he knows his voice, you know? And
yeah.
Because it's his voice is so distinct and amazing. It's great. That's how I see it. So then in terms of me, I've only started stand-up comedy for 1 year. And I started doing the videos about 3 years ago, you know, and I'm 32 years old. So as I said, I wanted to start comedy since I was 18, because you hear like Dave Chappelle started when he was 16.
Yeah.
That everyone started when they were 16, who's great, because it takes 10
years. 10 years.
The years of experience, it shows, like a 5-year comedian, you know, he already has way more experiences than 1 year. So I know that that's where I am. So I just have to just keep grinding and just keep going up there and keep writing. So I know that I'm willing to dedicate my life to it. You know, I'm not expecting anything from it.
But you
it's
know,
just a thing I like to do.
But a big Instagram following helps with
yes.
with it, right? That helps a lot, because a lot of comedians, no matter how good they are, you know, in the early days, I mean, if you didn't have an Instagram following and you were good, it just takes a long time for you to make the circuit to build a name. It takes years to do that.
But that's what people tell me, like the following is the hard part, like
the
you
hard
got
part.
That. But yeah. With me, like, I have an issue because my social media is a character. It's like Borat. I've always compared myself to Borat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Sacha Baron Cohen and Borat, that's Howie Farmer. But when I do stand-up comedy, I'm myself. I'm Andy Ho. Let alone, I've changed my name. I've had family issues. I'm really having an identity crisis where I just have, what do you call me? So I'm just like, call me Howie, right? But then it's like, because ever since I was young, I always just love mimicking people's accents. So I was, you know, the annoying person who just keeps talking in different accents. That was me. And then I just, that's what I say. I realized, like, oh, you know, I can use it to make content. So that's what I did. And then, I forgot what I was rambling on about, but, yeah, the stand-up comedy, I love it. the skits, the Instagram following is great, but they're two different products. Like, because I have done stand-up comedy shows as Holy Farm with the hat.
Yeah.
It's basically just a fob and an imported Vietnamese fella.
But does it work? Which works better?
I've done it. It's not sustainable because I did a double. So I did a 30-minute stand-up comedy set, and I did 15 minutes as myself, the Aussie-born Andy Ho. And then I was like, oh, I've got to go somewhere. Fucked off. Put on the hat and the high-vis shirt. We call it that orange farming shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then told the guy running the room to put on some bolero music, like Jung Yo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, there's a bunch of white people in the crowd. It's like, you know, 40. This is my first headlining show too. And I was trying to be creative. Came out and just did a bunch of racist jokes. Like, hey, you know, my name, very dumb jokes that I'd written in my head and thought was funny. So that one of the jokes was, you know, the durian skin. When I'm young, I kneel down on the durian skin for the pun, you know, when I'm a naughty boy. And then when I have a daughter, I'm going to make her kneel on durian skin. So the next time she go to house party and want to give blowjob, she got the trauma in a kneecap. I wrote a whole set about bullshit like that.
Yeah.
A couple dog eating jokes. It was funny. Don't get me wrong. It was funny. It got a very good laughs.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Borat. It was like watching Borat
doing
an interview almost, because I can do that. That's what I like to do. I like to stay in character for no reason. But the problem with doing that is that I was not experienced enough, and doing two characters is very tiring and drained. So if I was to ever do that again, I would do like a 10-minute guest spot as Howie Farmer and stay in character the whole way. So talking to hello and do the racist jokes that are like about Asian driver. Oh, my dad is a bad driver because he my dad is a bad driver, but I have to respect my elder, because respect is a two-way street, and my dad crashed his car both directions. Like it's very racist, self-deprecating.
Yeah.
because that's how I built my character. But then, as I said, I don't like doing it also because there's a fine line between doing what you are, your truth, and then doing a character. You have to be careful because you get lost in the character, or like people will just fucking, what's the word? Pigeonhole you, or just do the accent. You know what I mean? Like, I've struggled with that. And then now the idea for me now is just to break out of that now. And like, the funny thing is, because I moved a week ago, I don't have that hat because it's too big to put in your luggage. So I left all the hats back at the farm. I probably have 5 or 7 of the Nong La. Had a pretty good collection. But now I easily could buy a Nong La, which I was supposed to buy one, but I haven't bought it. And then the past 10 videos I've posted, I have not had the hat, but it still gets views. So that tells me I don't fucking need the hat, mm-hmm. because a lot of the time I was like a prisoner to the hat.
Yeah,
people be like, where's the hat?
Yeah.
Where's the hat? You know what I mean? It's like, fuck the hat. Like, you know, so that's what I'm telling myself now, is like, I need to just be myself more. And it's coming out. It's coming out. So we'll see how it goes. But I think that's where I'm at with what I'm doing.
What Australian comedians, Vietnamese Australian comedians, do you watch? And do you have sort of in your brain?
Yeah, so An Do is the name that, you know, I don't know how famous he is to you, but you probably know him.
I know him, but I think the majority of Vietnamese Americans don't know him.
Right. Excuse me. So An Do is just like a television, like the first Asian guy to be on TV.
Oh, wow. That big. First Asian guy.
Not the first Asian guy to be on TV, but the first likable Asian guy on TV. In Australian TV. In the 1990s. In 2000s. And because he was basically, you know, his life story. He migrated when he was young, right?
Yeah.
So then he had to, you know, I don't know what we call them, but it's basically, it's kind of my generation. It's my sister, brother's generation. And I'm a part of that, but I'm a young version of that.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, my brother and sister, they're in their 40s, 50s, probably like, you know.
My age.
So then that means that they all learn English late, but they, nonetheless, they've learned it. They're fluent. An Do was the first person to be Vietnamese and make it, right? And then his comedy, and then when I started to study about his career, he started as a stand-up comedian doing gigs,
yeah,
everything, hustled, you know what I mean? So yeah, he really did it through comedy. He's not Dave Chappelle, but he fucking did what he did, you know, his way. And then he branched off as now he does a painting, a show where he paints. He's just a personality. So you don't even know, like, maybe his lane started off as comedy and then now look at him. But he still has that comedy root. So with me, I'm kind of like An Do, but instead of all the shit he does, I do rap. I made 50 dong. I like hip hop. I like farming because my family are farmers. I don't love farming, but I know, fruits, vegetables, that will never die. So, it's lucrative. So, that's my thing. And then I look at An Do and I'm like, this guy's a fucking hustler. Like, this guy made it, you know, and all the white people adore him. He sells out shows about his life story. And, I've paid homage to him. I made a song about him.
Have you ever met him?
Never. So the goal is to meet him. I don't know if he knows about me, but I already know. Like, there's only two guys that inspire me in Australia, Vietnamese. And so number one is An Do. Number two is Luke Nguyen. So Luke Nguyen is the chef and he's on the TV. But Luke Nguyen is just very, Anthony Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of him. So his show where he goes, was it No Reservations? Whatever. He just goes to a new culture and just learns and is just adapts very quickly, shares this funny, entertaining bang. So Luke Nguyen does that for me. I also want to do that too, you know what I mean? So I want to be one of them. Whatever those guys are, that's what I'm trying to do. I'll be there. I'll get there.
Yeah,
I'm probably there already.
Yeah, you'll get there because you just don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You just don't give a flying fuck. Yeah. You're just, many of us would love to have that instinct where nothing holds you back.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, my whole life I lived holding back. So
how did you break free of this shit?
It's a lot of it with my parents. Just because I was expected to take over the farm, you know, think of that. I'm the only biological son of my father. He had like three daughters, you know, with his ex-wife. This guy really wanted a boy as an heir. And then my mom managed to get it for him. Here I am. And then I was expected to take over the farm. Yeah. It's kind of like a reverse Mulan type shit where it's like, I'm trying to fuck off. And then luckily here I am. So I managed, God has blessed me and my life, you know, things happen. I don't want to go into it. You know, I'm going to air out my whole fucking family life, but I've been able to wiggle out of the farm, and it did. There was many hard conversations. I think because I started dating a white girl last year. Shout outs to her. Anyways, and she was a singer, and she inspired me.
Mm.
And white people, they didn't give a fuck. Like you say you want to be a singer. Yeah, that's good. You're a singer. Yeah, good on ya. How's the singing going? But then if you're a Vietnamese, like, fucking don't you ever fucking sing again. Like, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, don't sing. Don't. You know? So that. So then, like, with my mom and dad, like, I didn't tell them I made skits. I did it in secret. And then their friends were the ones that told them, oh, you know, your son's fucking carrying on making videos. He's famous. And then that's when they started to catch on. And then I told my dad, I don't want to do what you do. I want to do what I do. And then thankfully, you know, I didn't have to prove much.
Yeah.
Because other people did it for me.
Yeah.
You know, so I just focused on that. And then they understood, oh, that's why Andy is yelling in his room by himself. Because I'm like, you know, just making skits. And then, like, I used to be really ashamed of it. And, like, let's say I'm making a skit, like one of the ones I'm doing. And then if I see my mom in the corner, I'll be like, oh, shit. And then I'll try to, like, yeah, act like I'm, like, I'd rather her catch me masturbating than watch me do a skit. That bad. But yeah. Anyways, now we're on good terms. So now she understands. And, like, people come up to me, take a photo. Like, I don't know. They want to do it, and then my mom's just laughing, you know. But then my mom's like, oh yeah, you she says that you mean nothing, but you không có tiền, you know. So it's like, okay. But we'll see. But yeah, so it's good. So I think that after going through all of that, like, it's almost like coming out of the closet.
Yeah,
as a Vietnamese creative, it's very similar. And then now I'm very free now. And then what I want to do now is to kind of help the other Vietnamese, no, you know, all people though, that were like me, who were like, who know they're creative and gifted in something, but had to suppress it because, you know, it's stupid or get a job. You know what I mean? But, you know, just keep it alive and keep doing it. So that's when I meet other young artists. I see them, see myself in them. So I always tell them, oh, that's good. You know, keep doing it, because you have to support each other.
But when things are difficult, what gets you out of the hole? What gets you back up on stage, so to speak?
Yeah. So luckily, a lot of the fans would say, like, oh, you know, I feel so depressed and you make my day better watching you, da 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 da. So that would help me. But then now I'm at a stage I can't read the comments too much, because, like, it just, it's not healthy for you. But I remember that, and, like, it's all about purpose to me now. It's like, what's your purpose in this life? You know, everyone has a different purpose. I already knew my purpose though, but the thing is, like, you just have to be willing to do it. I think I'm just very lucky that I got social media to kind of do what I do, and that way. And then my purpose is, like, it kind of sounds easy now. Oh, Holy Farmer, your purpose to make people laugh. Done. But it was so hard to get there. Very hard. Because I thought, oh, now my purpose is to feed my family now. Fuck the world. But then now it's kind of like, you know, my purpose is to make people laugh. My purpose is to help other people discover their talents, do something about it. Don't listen to your family sometimes, because what you know what I mean? Like, thinking about that. And I think a big thing was that girl that I was dating. She told me about a book called The War of Art. So it's not The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Pressfield.
Sun Tzu. But have you heard of that book?
Yeah, it's by Pressfield. Dan Pressfield?
Yes. So that book changed my life because when I first listened to it, I was like, no, I'm not going to listen, like, you know, audiobook. I'm a bit lazy. I don't like to read much. And I was like, oh, this book is stupid. And then I started listening, probably listened to it like 10 times to really understand it. And I was like, oh, shit. If I don't do comedy, might as well, like, what am I doing? Like, you are robbing the world of your gift. Can't do that. And it's a bad frequency. So then that's why whenever I make sure I do something creative, and then it's better than winning the lotto, the feeling when you're doing what you love, like comedy, when you do something like all music and then you sing, nothing can beat that. No drug can beat that. So that's why I try to emphasize. But then obviously there's a balance to it, because when you're too obsessive about something and you live by it, and then you're screwed. So that's what I'm working on too. So you got to balance your life too.
Are you still dating that singer?
No. We are still friends. Things happen. Da, 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 da. And then, anyway, oh man, there's a lot of stories that I could be telling, but I want to make them into my stand up. And I do want to like come to America and do stand up and just, you know, learn. Well,
when you're ready to come to America, there's a big community of comedians here that I can introduce you to. I will introduce you.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. That's my goal, man.
Yeah, there's many of them here and they're very good guys. Comedians are good guys.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Comedians are good guys, good guys and good gals, And who else in Vietnamese Australian comedy that you follow?
Yeah, so Vietnamese Australian comedy, to be honest, like, this is my opinion. So if it's wrong, whatever, I don't care. I don't think there's many. And I think a lot of the Asian comedians, no offense, but they're like kind of, they all are either wearing glasses or something and like work in corporate or something and all look like that. And there's not enough Asians who are like, you know, how do you say, pretty much like ex-cons, you know, like the rough ones with tattoos, stuff like that. Because I tell you, a lot of those guys are probably way funnier, but they just haven't gone on stage or like decided to turn it into a stand-up career, you know? So that's the thing. But with white people, okay, white people, a lot of white criminals, ex-cons, are all comedians, you know, the biggest comedians. But with Asians, a lot of our criminals are just like really low key, like zip, you know, not talking about much, or just not funny, or just like really gangster and like just good at being gangster. That's it. But the funny ones, you know, and that's where I feel I am, because I come from that. I've actually grew up in both sides, like, you know, my sister in like a university level education, doctors, you know, da da da. And then I've, you know, also got siblings who like were in the heroin epidemic, you know, in Australia. So I've seen both sides. I know what each the characters of both sides, the class levels, the culture, the everything, you know. So I feel like the comedians, especially the Asian comedians in Australia, they're very clean cut to me.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And I applaud it, whatever they do it. But that's where the Cat Williams comes in. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if
I hear
it
you.
It probably sounds wrong. Well, this is just how I feel. So I'm not going to try to make sense of anything of it. But I feel like if Cat Williams started comedy, but all the comedians going around were like Steve Urkel or something. Like, nah. And then Cat Williams just comes in and hits you with the real shit. That's how I feel I am. Obviously, if I go out now to a comedy club, I'm not gonna talk like that, you know, because there's politics, there's, you know, experience. Like, I'm just, who the fuck is this guy? You have to pay your dues. I know that, but I really want to just fucking because I get these visions like of a stadium of like me doing something like, oh, it's there. So yeah, that's how I've been feeling. I'm really confident, and as the days go by. It's like affirmations.
Yeah. And Hoey, yeah. Based on what you're describing to me, guys like that, people like this with these belief, it just sounds like you just already see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
You usually reach it.
For sure, man. And I know like it's so easy to lose it. You could lose everything.
You could lose it too. Day. Yeah. But if you keep having what you just described, if you just keep having it,
that's it.
And you nurture it and you don't let it die.
Yes.
It comes.
Yes.
And I understand what that,
yeah,
these ideas of like, you get, you know, you're shy and you want to hold things in and you don't feel comfortable and you feel embarrassed and you'd rather be caught masturbating rather than do your art.
Exactly.
I think we all, as we're growing into artists in this community, we are not aware of these stages enough and hear about these stages of where an artist is. But once you kind of see the stadium, once you see the finished canvas and you don't let go of it, you eventually arrive.
It's so good that you saying this, like, it makes sense to me. Like, everything you say makes sense to me. I'm sure everything I say to you makes sense to you. And that's important because, especially being Vietnamese, I think Vietnamese people, unless you're doing what's popular in Vietnam, the masses, if you're doing like, you know, hip hop and shit like that, obviously, your auntie won't know you're famous, right?
Yeah.
She'll be like, you know, because they, you know, they glorify like Paris by Night singers, whatever. That era. And we are a new breed. And we are like just mongrels, just a bunch of everything. Bunch of Wu-Tang, bunch of this. And then I think... with the Vietnamese American movement, you know, I've been following it. It's awesome. But when I think about comedy, I think about being Asian is what I've been kind of, I look like what I started with, but I kind of want to see where it goes. I want to take it further. So this is like a beginning phase for me, you know, just,
yeah.
But as I said, I'm still figuring out the lane and, yeah, when I think about it, I've only just started. So we'll see.
Well, Andy, I appreciate you coming on the show. It was,
that was crazy. Like, it's amazing what we talked about.
Yeah. And you know, I want to pick it up in a few more months, you know?
Oh yeah.
I want to hear. Yeah, I want to hear. We'll reach back out in a few more months because I want to track your progress with the new move. And where did you move to?
So previously I was in Darwin, which is the Northern Territory. Mm-hmm. And then I moved east. Yeah, east. To Brisbane. So where that is it's only an hour flight from Sydney. So in the Melbourne, Sydney, the capital cities, it's just right above there. Whereas where I was living before that was like far in the north in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And comedy was very small. So the place I'm at is more
dense.
Populated. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you could do more stand up there. You're now able to do more stage time, right?
And also what I've been doing is trying to make like a sitcom show. That's my dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You can do it yourself. You don't need it. You don't need, you used to need to have a studio contract, and now you can just set it up yourself.
Do it. And yeah, with the following. So I'm very blessed to have the following, but I need to kind of elevate, evolve every time. And a big thing about that is finding the right people, because, you know, finding the right talent. And that's what's been happening, you know, as I go by. I'm just like, everyone I meet is very talented. So it only gets better from here.
Yeah, it really does. Especially if you change up your environment and you're in a more populated city, more opportunity, more people to collaborate with. So I look forward to, you know, touching base in a few more months to see how the move went. And, you know, I follow you, and I'm a fan, and I wish the best in the next few months, man.
Thank you so much, man. And I'm so glad that we managed to get it done. Last time I had no power. Now I'm talking to you like this. So the next time I should really be fucking, I'll have my own electricity company.
Ball it. You'll be owning the electricity company, and then you'll be balling out of control in a studio or something.
I'll be a mogul. Yeah, you know, it's all happening. This is just the beginning. So
You'll have Eindo working for you, right?
He'll be making my coffee for me. Under the table. No, I love him. Oh, man. He's so good. No, I'm definitely excited. We got some big things happening.
Yeah. We'll figure out a way to make the introduction one day.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it.
All right, Eddie. Very cool, brother.
You.
All right.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.